Time Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts is over the moon about being quarantined with the other. That's actually me. I'm delighted to be home with my beloved Pooch, but he's pretty happy too, because as listeners to this podcast know, we have kind of a misery style relationship where he never wants me to leave the house and is really angry and resentful and thus enjoys being my captor. We're obviously home. I hope if you're listening to this, you're home too, or you're by yourself somewhere in the world. It's a bit surreal at this moment, obviously talking about the NFL amidst everything that's happening with the pandemic. But it's also, I feel like, given me, I don't want to speak for anyone else, kind of like a sense of normalcy that this is all still happening. And it's not only happening, Stephen Ruiz, it's actually happening with more intensity, I think, than recent years, because this has been, I think, one of the crazier free agency trade periods that I can remember.
Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day. Like, this is like the NBA. This is like NBA-style offseason, and that's what the NFL has always wanted, and they got it now. All it took was a global pandemic to get it, I guess.
So seconds before we started recording, news broke that we've got Adam Schefter and Jeff Darlington confirming that Thomas Patrick Edward Brady? I don't know. Either case, he is landing in Tampa. This has been kind of rumored for the last 24 hours, ever since Brady, well, I guess, actually, God, it feels like 24 hours, but it's really just started this morning when Brady said that he was going to leave. And the Bucs weren't really being talked about seriously as a likely destination for him. Like, it came up every now and then, Stephen, but, you know, I feel like you heard more Tennessee, maybe the Chargers, because, like, he'd want to be in L.A., and then it started gaining heat more and more. It kind of seemed likely they were going to move on from Jameis. And now it's happening. We don't know what the deal is just yet, but knee-jerk reaction, what do you make of that fit?
I don't know if it's going to work out. I'm interested to see if it will. I'm interested to see if Bruce Arians is kind of going to change his stripes a little and, you know, acquiesce to Brady, who does like to throw shorter passes. He's not really a downfield type of thrower at this point in his career, and we know that's Bruce Arians' MO. I'm just wondering, how much change are we going to get? Are we going to get, you know, Peyton Manning in Denver, where he kind of like reshaped that offense after a couple of rough weeks? I think that's what we'll see eventually, but it's going to be interesting because I know he has weapons, but I don't know if these weapons mesh well with his style of play. Huh. Like a player like Mike Evans, who wins on the outside, he gets open deep. He wins 50-50 balls. I do think Chris Godwin does mesh well with him because he can run those Gronk routes. But they don't have a Julian Edelman.
Hmm. They could draft one, I guess. But yeah, or sign one. They still have some money. A Shaq Barrett contract hasn't come down yet, but I imagine it will at any point now. I love Chris Godwin. Anyone who listens to this knows that. And who knows? Maybe O.J. Howard will reappear now that Tom Brady's there and likes to use tight ends. But I kind of agree there. I do have some questions about the fit. Not because I'm terribly concerned about Brady's ability to throw downfield or willingness to throw downfield at all. I don't think that's been like the primary issue with decline for him, actually. And I think sometimes we assume that's always the case with like older quarterbacks, that they can't throw deep anymore, but they can do everything else. You know, he obviously doesn't have a Jameis Winston arm. But I think to me, the bigger issue with him last season in particular in New England was the unwillingness to take hits. And that brings me some concern, not necessarily because of this Tampa Bay offensive line, which isn't great, but has improved a bit. Now, they do have some issues, I think, at the tackle position, but was decent actually at pass protecting. But the nature of the Arians offense, where he asks his quarterbacks to, you know, stand in the pocket while these routes develop, and then he can hit receivers. So I don't know. I think there's going to have to be a little bit of adjustment on both sides. That said, I imagine Todd Bowles is very happy that he no longer has to watch his defense run out on the field every 10 seconds. And I kind of think they could be good. Let me ask you that. What do you think, Bucks? 9 wins, 10 wins? Like, where are you putting them right now? Can they take the division?
I don't think they're better than the Saints yet. I do think they're the second best team in the division now because the Panthers are just falling off the face of the earth. And I really don't know what's going on with Atlanta. I think they're kind of past their peak. So I could see 10 wins. This defense was really good last year. Like Jameis put them in terrible spots, but like efficiency wise, like DVOA, they were top five, top 10 defense. Todd Bowles was doing some good stuff. Their secondary is young and quietly good. They had some pass rush, obviously Shaq Barrett, and then Bowles is just a blitz happy coach, so he's going to generate pass rush. So if Brady isn't washed, like totally washed, if he's like a, you know, 8 to 10, 8 to 12 type quarterback, then I think they can win. I'm not going to say they can win the division, but I think they can compete for a wild card spot.
Yeah. And they've still got money, by the way. So I don't think this roster is set just yet. On the other side, so, you know, with some of these quarterbacks coming off the board, with Brady going to the Bucks, with Rivers going to Indianapolis on a 1-year, $25 million deal. By the way, I was like a little bit perplexed that Indianapolis didn't stay in the running for Brady, because to me, that's just kind of like a better version of Rivers at this point without the interceptions. But when I saw the deal, I thought, oh, maybe that's why, like, they wanted the 1 year. We don't know what, maybe Brady signed a 1-year deal with the Bucks, and I'll look stupid for saying this, but I don't think he will. And I think it'll be for a lot more money. That's just a hunch. But I guess that explains a bit what they're doing in Indianapolis. But for, so he's off the board. Cam Newton's available. So here are the options for New England. They've got Jarrett Stidham, who I'm not going to lie, I don't have strong opinions about. Cam Newton is available for a trade, which he is very upset about, if you have read or tried to read his Instagram post. So there's that. And then your Andy Dalton ostensibly is available for a trade. And then Nick Foles, who they could trade for and probably get some picks if they actually wanted to go that route, which I don't think they will, but that's the final option. So of that poo-poo platter of available quarterback. Oh, geez. Jameis. Also Jameis.
How did you forget about Jameis?
I don't know. Oh, I own Jameis in Dynasty, and I really want him to go to the New England. So what do you think is the best option for New England, and what do you think is the most likely option?
And we also have to throw in the fact that Jameis post-eye surgery, which could be a totally different Jameis. We don't know.
Oh my God, he's going to go to New England and never throw another interception. Or Cam's going to go to New England and never get hurt again. One of those two things is going to happen. But what would you want to happen?
I, from just a selfish standpoint, I've always wanted to see Belichick with one of these dual threat quarterbacks, and Cam Newton is that dual threat quarterback. I think he could still run. I don't think you have to run him because I think he is an underrated pocket passer. I just want to see what Belichick and Josh McDaniels would do with a player like that. Like, as good as Brady was, he's the greatest quarterback of all time. He's not like an overwhelming physical talent.
Right. Jameis quietly mobile. I want to throw that out there too. Over the last couple of years, it's something he doesn't get accounted for.
He's got some goofy mobility where, like, he's like so goofy, like you just like he like boggles the mind of defenders. And gets that.
he can extend plays. Yeah, he runs like how Bortles would run, which I once compared to a bear running away with a jar of honey. Like, that's what I think when I see Jameis. Like, he just got away with something, you know? And the other thing is, like, I think with New England, they have shown a willingness to completely change what they do on offense, and tailor it to their quarterback, right? Like, it's easy to say, well, you assume, like, this was kind of why I think Teddy would have made sense. Cause you think, okay, that's pretty much the Brady offense. But in the past, when they've had quarterbacks come in for Brady, you know, Garoppolo, Brissett, Castle, they have changed what they've done. They've mixed it up. So I wouldn't put it past McDaniels and Belichick to completely come up with a new offense for Jameis. Now, all that said, I'm not sure his Patriots roster is that great. So I don't really know. Like, I guess with Jameis, you have the upside there. I don't know if I still would, like, and, you know, they did lose some players. I don't know. I just don't know if, like, that defense, they're definitely not going to be as good as they were last year. I don't know if this team is very good.
Right. When I was looking at, like, destinations for Brady and what made the most sense for a 43-year-old quarterback who's still kind of good, but he's going to cost a lot of money, like, a roster like the Patriots makes no sense. Like, I don't think it made sense for either of those parties to stick together. So I agree with you. And I will say this, they drafted Jarrett Stidham, and he's kind of that dual threat kind of quarterback. So maybe that's like a preview of where they're going in the future offensively.
So I mentioned Cam Newton. You're a Panthers fan, for those who don't know. So you've seen him up close and personal. How do you feel about him to the Pats? And if not there, where else would you like to see him go? Chargers? I've been saying that for a while now, so I feel like I've been trying to manifest it, but it seems like the most likely option.
Yeah, I'm one of those Panthers fans who kind of became a Cam Newton fan like 4 years into his career. So I'm kind of just happy to see him in a better place right now because I know the direction Carolina's going in. Or actually, I don't know what direction Carolina's going in. And I think that's the problem.
Yeah, talk to me about that because I'm befuddled. I don't understand what their timeline is at this point.
I don't know. Their strategy right now is the equivalent of Cam Newton's font that he types in. Like, it's hard to decipher. I have no idea what they're doing. Are they rebuilding? Are they... I saw the term, what was it? Soft reboot, any part of that. I don't want any part of that. That's like when like a TV series like replaces like a main character with another actor and just like doesn't mention anything about it. Like, I don't want that.
Oh my God. And that, oh, Teddy. Teddy's not Aunt Viv. Don't do that to Teddy, oh, our God. Precious Teddy. Yeah, it bums me out too because, like, you know how I feel about Teddy. Everyone, if you don't love Teddy, get out. Just get out at this point. I'm happy for him to get $63 million. I mean, I don't know if that's real. I haven't looked at the actual contract. But, you know, he's getting paid. I have mixed feelings about this for Carolina because you're right. Like, I thought when Kuechly retired, they got rid of Olsen. You know, and then it seemed like they were trading Cam Newton. I thought, okay, this team's rebuilding. Like, that's what's up. They got an owner who understands what it takes to pull this off, long timeline, giving this coach a long contract. He likes analytics. Like, he's going to do what it takes. But this isn't really a rebuild. Like, paying Teddy Bridgewater for 3 years, again, maybe it's two, I don't know, $60 million, that's not a rebuild move. Like, it's a good deal. I guess it could be a rebuild if they thought he was tradable, maybe, you know, after like a year or two, but I don't really understand what they're doing with him. Now, from a football perspective, Steven, I actually like this a great deal. I don't like Matt Rhule, I think his defining characteristic as a team builder and sort of looking back at some of his college teams is that he doesn't really have one. He's very adaptable to do whatever it takes to rebuild. And he's like this master rebuilder. But Joe Brady, their offensive coordinator, who was last seen with LSU before that was in New Orleans, he does have a signature. And it's one that I think works really well with Cam Newton, you know, a little bit of spread, a little bit of West Coast, throw in a lot of RPOs. And I like that combined with the weapons they have in Samuel and DJ Moore and Christian McCaffrey, like it all Bridgewater. It's already happening. But anyways, it all makes sense together, I think, when you think about it coming together on the football field.
Right. And if you're going to have a quarterback that likes to throw checkdowns, have a running back like Christian McCaffrey who could turn those checkdowns into big plays. So yeah, like schematically, it makes all the sense in the world. It's just the timeline makes no sense. Like, either you're tanking or you're not. And I don't think signing a $20 million a year quarterback, although, you know, those scales are sliding. I don't think that's a sign of a rebuild. Neither is trading Trey Turner. I think he's 26, an all-pro guard, for an aging left tackle and no draft picks. So that's
why did they do that? Can you explain to me, like, give me any reason why, from the Panthers' point of view, that makes sense?
Because Marty Herney, the GM, needs to win now to save his job. Matt Rhule is more interested in... And, you know, he's more interested in a long-term rebuild. So I feel like it's like they have the same password to a different, like, to the same Netflix account where they can both, like, log in and change stuff. And, like, like they each get a turn running the team for a day. And I think you're just seeing two different strategies.
Yeah, I feel like Marty Herney's trying to watch, like, Love is Blind or something. And Matt Rhule is all about, like, a serious stuff. He's like, I want to watch the, like, you know, this Al Chapo
documentary.
The World War II documentary, right? Yeah, Al Chapo. I just watched a documentary. I'm like not a big documentary person. I just watched one on Hulu because my husband made me. And honestly, I felt like I was doing work. Like afterwards, I was like, well, now what do we get to do for fun? Like, Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it really highlights like how difficult it is to get a quarterback, a head coach, and a general manager all on the same page at the same time and on the same timeline. It's challenging. I do want to go back before we move on from the quarterback movement to the Chargers, though. You know, you mentioning that trade got me thinking about that because, again, if Cam doesn't go to New England, please, Jameis, let me manifest that. If he doesn't end up there, it does seem like the Chargers are the most likely destination for him. Makes sense. We've been hearing for a while, you know, we know Anthony Lynn is good with mobile quarterbacks. I think that offensive line, they just signed Brian Bulaga, by the way. So it's a offensive line in progress. They have weapons. They have a good defense. So I actually think that becomes kind of like a sneaky, interesting, and fun team. Is there anywhere else for Cam, though, other than the Chargers and the Patriots? Are we leaving anything out as possible trade partners for him?
Yeah, I think Chicago makes the most sense, kind of. Yes. But I don't know their salary cap situation. I don't know if they can fit Cam Newton in because he is going to cost a decent amount of money. If Teddy Bridgewater is getting $20 million, I think Cam might be – what is he going to be able to command, 25 maybe?
But do you think they would extend him? Is it possible – I mean, because it depends on what they have to give up. Like, if they're giving up substantial trade picks for him, they would. But at this point, the Panthers, like, again, unless Chargers are in the mix, like, who are they trading with? Like, they don't have a lot of leverage. They waited.
Right. And then they announced that they were, you know, getting rid of him. So now the leverage, whatever leverage they had, which wasn't a lot, is just completely out the window. So, yeah, I don't think they're getting a lot in return. So maybe a team can get him to play that final year of his contract, which I think it's only like $18 million. But I think he's gonna want some long-term security wherever he goes.
Also, like, do you really see him walking into Hollis Hall as the backup and not? First of all, I feel like Trubisky would have like a nervous breakdown immediately. That's the hard knocks I want is the Bears if they trade for Cam Newton. But like, yeah, I guess you could say, yeah, let's take a flyer, see if he's healthy. That's the question with him. And then if he is healthy, give him a longer-term contract. But if he is, I don't know. I don't hate that. It really depends on what you give up for him, I think. If you're not giving up a lot, I don't hate it as a look-see. I think there's so much uncertainty with him because of his health that if I'm a team, I'm not averse to the idea of being like, yeah, I probably have to pay a little bit more if I wait. But yeah, let's figure it out. Let's see if he's healthy and see what he's got. So all that said, okay, so we're just wrapping up the quarterbacks. We've got... Here's my prediction right now. So we've got Cam, Jameis to the Patriots, Cam to the Chargers. I just feel like that's the most likely. Dalton to the Bears, I feel like seems
like that.
Yeah, right. It makes sense. Did I leave anyone out? That's everyone, right? And then Rivers is already on the Colts.
Poor Nick Foles, Super Bowl MVP. No respect for him.
The thing about trading for Foles is you probably get a draft pick out of it. So
you also have to pay him like $20 million. For 2 years too. So
no, you can. I think you can move on after this year, right?
No, he has a roster bonus that guarantees in like 2 weeks.
Aristocrat's voice, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Okay, let's take a quick break now that we've gone over the quarterbacks and answer a couple questions. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy. Getting out is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com. The revolutionary lending platform that knows you are more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high interest credit card debt. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate. Since it's just a soft pull, it won't affect your credit score. The hard pull happens if you accept the rate. The best part? Once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. The next day. Over 400,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is top-ranked in their category with a 4.9 out of 5 rating on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/Mina. To find out how low your Upstart rate is, checking your rate only takes a few minutes. That's upstart.com/Mina.
Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
All right, just taking a couple of questions right now. Been a bit of little bit of a time crunch. This comes from Caitlin1129. She asks, if someone is in the market to adopt a puppy, what is the best football related name you could give said dog? Steven, do you own a dog?
I do not.
Do you own a pet?
I do not, but if I did own a pet, it would be a cat. So I'm going to go with Purtis Samuel.
Have I ever told you about my feud with the Carolina Panthers mascot?
No. Please enlighten me.
What's his name again?
Sir Purr. He's royalty.
First of all, how did he get to be royalty? Who made that decision? Okay. I pulled up his website. There was a period, this is before I started working for ESPN when I had to, be more professional. And I feel like y'all can go back and look up some wild tweets for me, like 2013 or something. Including me tweeting how much I hated that. This is when the Panthers and Seahawks would play each other like every freaking year also, which was like unbelievably annoying. I'm sure they're playing this year. I haven't looked at the schedule, but, and so I did some insulting photoshops of Sir Purr. and he's got this website with his personal stats. Measure. Performing arts. Wait. That's personal. I'm like, dude, come up with a new pun, okay? Like, there's so much stuff you can do with cat stuff, and I just, anyways, there's a bunch of weird stats. Consume 6.5 gallons of milk each day. What does that even mean?
Are you on his website right now?
Do you think I had that memorized? Of course I'm on the website.
I thought you were just like making it up, like it was just like a general, like just off your memory alone.
Caitlin, I think you should get a dog and name him Furtis Samuel, not Purtis Samuel. Or Bobby Wagner is always my name for a dog. Okay, just one more question. Jimmy in review is a big Seahawks fan, I'm guessing, because he asked, what happened to Seahawks first round pick LJ Collier? Great question. Many Seahawks fans have this question. LJ Collier was, of course, a healthy scratch for a number of games, which is really not something you want to see out of your first round draft pick, especially when you're a Seattle Seahawks. You're desperate for a pass rush. They're saying he'll be better. You know, he can make, and I'm not going to rule out a player after 1 year. Absolutely not. He's a little bit on the older side, but Seattle clearly needs a pass rush. And fortunately, they've done nothing in free agency, which if you're a Seattle Seahawks fan, you are used to at this point.
I feel like you could have cut that question off at what happened to Seahawks' first round pick. Like, isn't that the question every year?
Well, I did cut off the question where Jimmy in review then asks, was he writing a secret? No, that's not cool. Okay. So yes, it is the question every year. They've had some issues and some bad luck as well. By the way, I'm so excited for Jermaine Ifedi to get $15 million a year from someone. All right. That's it. I'm cutting it short this week, but, Keep leaving the questions. I really love them. And, you know, now that we're done with the quarterbacks, I'm going to ask you a question. I don't want you to talk about a quarterback when you answer it.
Okay.
Do your best. You can hint at it. Mm-hmm. Stephon Diggs went to the Bills. I don't want you to talk about it because I don't want to lose my Bills fans listeners who I love. And I'm going to start this by saying I love this for the Bills. They gave up a first. There's some late rounders switching hands. But I love it for football reasons. I think that is an incredible wide receiver core. I love John Brown. I always tweet John Brown is always open. Well, now he's going to be even more open that he gets to be number two. I love that group. I love it from a roster construction standpoint, not just because the Bills have a ton of draft picks and cap space, but because in Stephon Diggs, you basically, like, he's basically on a rookie contract. I mean, he's more expensive, but you get four more years. So I love everything about this for Buffalo, other than maybe he'll get surly for reasons we don't have to talk about after like a couple, like, you know, a few games. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. Like, the best thing to do is to trade for disgruntled veterans, because when you trade for one, their guaranteed money stays with their old team. So you get a team-friendly deal. It's cheaper. You can get out of it whenever you want. And I feel like, I know they gave up a first-round pick, which you never want to do, but they were going to draft a receiver anyway, and you, at the pick they were drafting at, you're not getting a receiver like Stephon Diggs, who's a legit number one receiver. He's not like big. And I think Bills fans wanted a red zone target, but Stephon Diggs is even better than that. Like, he can get open anywhere on the field, and that, I think that's what they needed. They had the underneath guy in Beasley. They had the deep threat in John Brown. Now they have a guy that can just earn targets all over the field.
He's excellent, too, in that intermediate area in the middle, which, by the way, like, is an area where I thought Josh Allen, yeah, I just said his name, took a great leap forward. I thought he was better in that area last season. It's deep where he struggled. So I like the idea that they're focusing on that, you know, a guy who's, yeah, a true number one. On the other side, I do not love this from Minneapolis. I keep calling the Vikings Minneapolis. It's so weird. Now, I understand that Diggs probably forced their hand a bit, right? And wanted out and wanted a new contract, and they're in cap hell. So I get that. And they did get, now they have two first round picks. That's great. I'm sure they'll, well, this is why I don't love it. I'm worried that this is going to make Mike Zimmer double down even more on Zimmer ball.
Yeah, and the secondary is kind of looking weak right now, so I wouldn't be surprised if he drafted another cornerback in the
first
round.
Wait, you mean to tell me Mike Zimmer is going to draft cornerbacks? Are you sure about that?
I don't think he should. I think they should draft a receiver, but I'm not putting it past Mike Zimmer. This is a team that took a guard last year in the first round.
He loves taking cornerbacks. He loves corners. But I don't know. They did, by the way, I didn't even acknowledge the fact that they extended Kirk Cousins for a couple more deals or a couple more years. Well, let's be honest. It'll probably be a couple more deals too. Salute to Kirk Cousins, the bag king of the NFL, by the way. Like, at this point, somebody, I tweeted about how Kirk's new deal, because it's pretty short, he's going to be up again when he's 34, and, you know, just praising him for being a legend at the bank. And someone wrote, yeah, you know, but not to Sam Bradford's level. Well, Sam Bradford did it before the current CBA, right? Like, what Kirk is doing is unprecedented, unless Dak actually ends up in that territory.
Right. And Bradford was a first overall pick. Like, yes. Kirk was a late round pick and turned into this. So Bradford doesn't get as much credit as Kirk does for, you know, securing this bag over and over again.
So another wide receiver, I don't want to spend too much time talking about DeAndre Hopkins. And I mean, and the reason I don't is because it's so obviously insane and bad for Houston. I'm not really sure what else there is to say. I'm sure we're also going to hear stories, right, about how he wanted out and he wanted a deal. And I had actually, you know, and maybe he wasn't happy there. It's something you kind of heard every now and then. All that's true. That has nothing to do with the return, right? Like, even if that's true, even if their hand was forced and they felt the need to trade him, given what we just talked about Diggs, I mean, like the OBJ trade, where, by the way, the Giants also got Jabril Peppers, who was like low-key actually quite good last year. So anyways, the return is so below his value. It's utterly indefensible. Like, is there anything you can point to for Houston that makes this not an F? Anything?
No. Like, I can't come up with one thing. Like, maybe, no. I was going to say maybe they're tanking, but they still have Deshaun Watson. Like, I want to see the look on Bill O'Brien's face when the news broke of the Diggs deal and he saw the package that the Vikings got.
I mean, I mentioned this on Highly Quarantined this morning. Like, who's a bigger winner today than Bill O'Brien, by the way, because everyone stopped talking about how effed up this was because of Brady. Like, what a shout out to him for escaping a little bit of scrutiny. It even annoys me that it was David Johnson, not just because Johnson, you know, hasn't been good since 2017, but because, like, the skill set that I guess he could potentially bring to this team in terms of being both every down back and a pass catcher, they can get that out of Duke Johnson, the perennial underrated Duke Johnson, and yet who they are like refused to use last year, annoying me all the time. It just, I don't know. There's nothing to say. Like, it's just, I actually was thinking about looking at the Texans Reddit page because I don't know that many Texans fans, and I imagine, I guess I just like seeing other people's pain sometimes. No, I just kind of wanted to see the epic freak out I imagine is happening. Let's see. I'll do it right now. While I'm looking at this, obviously it's a slam dunk for the Cardinals. What do you think, like, how do you think Cliff is going to use his new, you know, cornucopia of, okay, here's the first post that came up. My case for why the Hopkins trade was a good idea. Just kidding. Fire this clown immediately. People are so upset.
People are saying they traded for the Cardinals' backup running back. No, they traded for the Cardinals' third string running back because Chase Edmonds had beat him out for that job before Kenyon Drake came to Arizona.
Shout out to me for winning my fantasy league last year with Danny Kelly, quote, a fantasy expert with Kenyon Drake, who I traded for. Text exchange between two Texans fans. Wow, we're getting David Johnson. Reply, wonder what we gave up for it. ... Oh, no. Oh, God, no. Petition to make this our new photo. It's a picture of the Texans logo, but with a hand where he's like covering his face because he's so upset. Oh man, this is really bad. This is rough. I encourage everyone to go.
See, I'm like the opposite of you. I like to go to teams subreddits when they just made like a big signing that I personally think is going to fail. And I like to laugh at their optimism. Like, I went right to the Titans subreddit when they signed Tannehill. I know you like the Tannehill deal, but I'm not a fan, but I went right to there and I was like, yeah, this is not going to work out.
Oh, I didn't see this. Someone named John Lopez tweeted, an NFC coach texted me today. He said, when the news of the DeAndre Hopkins trade hit the coaches meeting, our entire room burst into laughter. Oh my God. This is okay. Let's talk about it for Arizona.
Yeah, this is what Kliff needed. He needed a receiver that could beat man coverage one-on-one. Like, he has no problem scheming open receivers. The problem is when teams play man coverage, you can't really scheme them up with route designs and route combinations. So you need talent at that point. You need a guy who can just beat the man in front of him. And obviously that's DeAndre Hopkins. He already put together one of the most fascinating run games in the league, and it was one of the most efficient. So I think this offense just takes off now that he has a true number one receiver.
I agree. I mean, and what I loved about that run game was that, you know, they didn't have that in place at the beginning of the year, right? Like, Kliff came out, you know, running a ton of 10, doing some of the stuff he did in college, and then he evolved the offense. And like, benching David Johnson, that's not something every first year coach in the NFL does, right? You know what I mean? Like, he already showed to me, like, yes, he struggled some with some situational errors in decision making and game management, but from a philosophical schematic standpoint, like, I felt like he showed a lot of the adaptability that I personally believe is maybe the single most important quality in head coaches, is certainly what we've seen with Bill Belichick. So I'm very excited to see what he does with DeAndre Hopkins. I'm excited to see what Kyler does with DeAndre Hopkins. I love Kyler. So yeah, this is great for them. The NFC West is going to be an absolute hellscape. So Amari Cooper, big deal. Not a ton to talk about there. I thought it was pretty reasonable for Dallas, all things considered, you know, since he was a true free agent. The deal I really want to talk to you about, Stephen, I'd love to get your take on, is what I alluded to earlier, because I'm still kind of working through my own thoughts on it. And that's what the Niners did. Sending DeForest Buckner to Indianapolis for the number 13 overall pick. There might have been some late ones too, I don't know. And then on that same day, paying Eric Armstead $85 million. The Indianapolis then went on to pay Buckner $21 a year. I don't remember what the total was. So you're talking $21 a year versus $17 a year. I haven't seen the actual structure of those deals, but safe to say Armstead is cheaper. I know we can talk about Indianapolis in a second. How do you feel about this for the 49ers? Tell me your knee-jerk reaction, because I've gone back and forth a few times.
Right. I do not like the decision to choose Buckner over Armstead, which I think is a decision they made. Maybe it was forced. Maybe they couldn't re-sign Buckner and they couldn't trade Armstead for the pick they got. So maybe it was forced, but just in a vacuum, that decision just doesn't sit right with me, just because Armstead, he had a breakout year in 2019, but he doesn't have a long track record of elite play. Meanwhile, DeForest Buckner has been a better player, and he's been a better player for longer. And I really thought he was the key to that pass rush, because they'd like line him up over the center, and that would just get one-on-one matchups for the rest of their pass rushers, including Eric Armstead. So I don't know if Armstead's going to be able to repeat the success he had without DeForest Buckner in the middle of that defensive line.
I have the same fear, right? Because Armstead, a lot of his production came when DeForest was injured, and they moved him outside, and you saw this massive increase in pass rush productivity and sacks. And I assume with Buckner gone now, they're going to move him back inside. I think sometimes we can underestimate the impact that a stud defensive tackle has on the rest of the pass rush. And I think Buckner is a true stud. Like, he's not Aaron Donald, but he's about as close as you're going to get to a Donald or like a Chris Jones in the NFL. And he's been so consistently good, right, over the course of his career. Like, I used to say he was your favorite football player's favorite football player. Like, he's kind of one of those guys where, like, NFL players talk about how good he is, but you don't really hear his name mentioned that much, especially when that when the Niners weren't good, right, even though he was quietly always living up to his draft status. So I don't like the pick of him, but I understand the position they were put in given their cap space and, you know, the fact that they traded for and then paid Dee Ford, who, like, that to me is where this kind of goes wrong, even though Ford was good. But I think that was like when this decision was set in motion. It wasn't like this year they said, okay, we like Eric Armstead more than DeForest Buckner, and, you know, we're going to get a pick and save a little money. It kind of goes back to this is, they sort of like, you, they came to the conclusion, we can't spend this amount of money and assets, and I say assets, including the opportunity cost of the 13th overall pick, on the defensive line. This is a decision that's been in the works for a while. By the way, DJ Jones, who is hurt, other defensive tackle, also very good. So that, I think, is someone who they can rotate in as well. But we'll see what they do with the 13th overall pick. Also, I'm not sure that they'll go interior DL. I could see them going wide receiver there. Unless they, you know, maybe they'll pay Emmanuel Sanders. They might still go wide receiver there. But it's a decision that I think makes sense in the long... It makes sense from a cap management, roster management standpoint, but it's going to mean a loss of talent this year. And they'll suffer for it this year. That's all.
Right. And I think one of the reasons that they chose Armstead maybe was they were able to push a lot of the money to the back of the contract.
Like, I noticed that, yeah.
Hit,
I
think, next year is $6.5 million, and it doesn't really jump up to around, like, I think it jumps to $20 million in 2022, so they have some flexibility there. But when you get a chance to, even a player as good as DeForest Buckner is, I just think that 13th pick plus the money you're going to have to pay him if you extend him, I think it's a great deal for the 49ers. Like, if you exclude the part where maybe they picked Armstead over him, yeah, I think it's a great deal for them. It's a great return.
So I think that's kind of where I come down on it. I'm like, this is about as good as you're going to get, and it's a great return. I mean, it's telling that they would not have gotten that kind of pick for Eric Armstead at all. Nowhere close to it. And that is telling of the talent discrepancy. But given the choices they've already made, the situation they're in with their cap, it makes sense, and they maximize their return. Now, all that said, I love this for Indianapolis. Steven, I know, like, that's rich. To give up that pick and pay that amount of money, I'm sure, like, if you run the numbers on that, you have to get Chris Jones level production out of him. But he's a sure thing. You know, I tend to think sometimes we bet a little bit too much on team's ability to make the correct pick and extract that kind of value out of like mid-level draft picks or whatever in the first round. And I think this is a team that is an opposite situation to the Niners. They have a ton of cap space. It was an area of need for them. I did not think he was available. So I don't know. I really like it for them.
Yeah. And I waited to see the structure of the contract before I really put my take out there. I do think that pick was a little too high for a defensive player, but I love what they did with the contract where it was basically like a Jimmy G type deal where they gave him a big roster bonus in the first year.
Yeah.
So they don't have to give him a signing bonus, which prorates over the length of the deal. So that keeps his cap hits really low. Like, in 2 years, he's going to be making like $15 million a year. And with the cap, that's going to be nothing. And they have the cap space now to pay him a lot of money. So just eat that big cap number in the first year. And then now he's a bargain every year after this. And that's how you leverage your cap space. So I think Chris Ballard did a good job of doing that. I still don't know if I'd give up the 13th overall pick for him, but I love what they did with the contract.
I mean, your point about the nature of the deal is really important too, especially looking around the league and seeing like all these short-term deals, right? Like, there are a lot of players who are pretty aware of what's happening with the cap. And the fact that they were able to structure it that way, I think, is going to look great in a few years. And something to think about as we watch some of these other deals come in. So speaking of those other deals, just kind of wrapping up here, like, are there any teams where you've been really impressed by what they've done? Any deals you loved? Any winners, let's end on a positive note, in free agency thus far?
I really like what the Dolphins are doing. I know people kind of balked at the Eric Flowers contract, but he was quietly a pretty good guard in Washington last year, and $10 million seems to be the going rate for a serviceable guard right now. So I don't totally hate that deal, but I like what they're doing on defense. I know the Van Noy deal is probably going to look bad in a year or two, but at least he's with an ex-Patriots coach who might know how to get the most out of him. But it seems like they're prioritizing coverage players. They signed Byron Jones to a big deal, and I think he could be their Stephon Gilmore.
And just like that, the nerds are back, Miami. You got us. I was thinking, right when I saw that Byron Jones is going there, that was my first thought. Like, ooh, Jones and Xavien Howard. Ooh, they're building from the back in. Ooh, coverage over pass rush. Because, yeah, I thought they would have like one of these early deals with like a Clowney or, you know, a trade for Chris Jones or something. And so the way they've approached this kind of with Byron Jones being their big deal and then picking their spots on the inside is interesting. And yeah, I like it. I like those signings. It's funny, the Eric Flowers signing also, not that bad. Not that bad. The Ravens continue to kill it in disturbing ways.
Right.
If I was another team, I would not do deals with them right now. I'll throw out another one. I love some of these Raiders signings. I don't have them all in front of me, but they got Corey Littleton for 3 years, $36 million. Again, like with these two, so many 2 and 3 year deals. Not bad, honestly. I think he's one of the, I had Ryan Clark last week and I talked about like who are the best cover linebackers. And, you know, I was raving about him. He's not the best run defender, but he's incredible in coverage. And to have a linebacker who can do that is so useful in today's NFL. They also add, I always struggle with his name, Nick Kwiatkowski, turn it, the Bears guy. It was pretty good last year, too. Also,
Aaron Rodgers just calls him 44. That's what Aaron Rodgers did. So just call him 44.
I got to start doing that. That's how you sound like a cool football guy.
Right.
All right. Yeah. 44, who also is good in coverage. So I think like I like what that they're adding speed in the middle of the field is something I also like. And it's kind of similar to we're talking about the Dolphins a little bit. I like that, too, for them. And they've quietly had some like pretty good drafts. So, yeah, and I didn't mind the Mariota signing either. So go Raiders. I like what you're doing. So positive.
And they got Littleton for like Blake Martinez money, basically.
Oh my God.
Like,
how much was
Martinez got $10 million a year.
He's so much better than Blake Martinez. 12.
Right. It's not even close.
That's wild. What's the funniest contract? Other than, I mean, you know, there's the Hopkins thing, but like, what's the contract? Well, it's obviously George Fant. I don't even know why I asked the question.
That's the thing. Like, I don't think there's been any egregious deals so far. Like, there's none that I've laughed at besides the Bill O'Brien trade.
Yeah. Like, I don't love the Jimmy Graham deal, but it's not long. It's fine.
Oh, yeah. It's like, that's, you know, it's only like $16 million. That was, that's an LOL Bears moment, but yeah.
It's like fine.
Yeah. I can't think of one off the top of my head. And by this time, usually by this time of the calendar, we have one of those deals. We have like a Brock Osweiler deal that we're all making fun of and already know is going to fail, but like, I think Austin Hooper may have gotten overpaid, but I still think he's a good player. So if you're going to overpay someone, overpay a good player.
I didn't even hate the Case Keenum deal. Everyone was ragging on him. I'm like, it's fine.
Those same people were ragging on the Nick Foles contract in Philadelphia when they signed him. So
there you go. Case Keenum's going to lead the Browns to a Super Bowl. You heard it here first. On that note, let's take a quick break and get to our last questions. Is there something that's interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? If so, BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who are specialized in issues such as depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, self-esteem, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. Anything you share is confidential, and it's so convenient. Get help at your own time and at your own pace. You can schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with a therapist. If you are not happy with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time at no additional charge. Best of all, it's a truly affordable option, and listeners get 10% off your first month with the discount code Mina. So why not start today? Go to betterhelp.com/Mina. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor you'll love. BetterHelp.com/Mina.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
All of my questions, including Lenny's questions, are about The Bachelor.
Oh, I'm ready for it.
Question one. Was this the first season of The Bachelor you've watched? So I noticed, so just a little background, Steven was tweeting a bit about, I noticed some parts of football Twitter tweeting a bit more about The Bachelor this year than ever before. Was this your first season?
No, my first was Becca's season. I actually was assigned to write about it because that was the year when there was a bunch of football guys on it. Mike Renner from
PFF
was on. Clay Harbor was on. There was one more that was, Colton. Yeah. So yeah, I wrote like 30,000 words about The Bachelor that season.
Question two. Is Barb the Bill Belichick of The Bachelor?
Ooh.
So for those who don't know, yes. Explain who Barb is.
So Barb is Peter's mom. Peter was The Bachelor this year, and Peter, I think, had some problems making some decisions, and he had a problem deciding between his final two women, and Barb did not. She chose, I'm forgetting the names. She chose Hannah Ann. Is it Hannah Ann over Madison? And Peter was in love with Madison. It was clear to everyone. I think it was even clear to Hannah Ann, and she was dead set against Madison, and Peter basically broke her heart and chose the other girl.
The cam of Barb reacting was new television territory that, frankly, I was thinking about Belichick. I made the comparison because if they do sign Jameis, I need a Belichick, like a Barb-style cam on Belichick for every time Jameis is on the field. And, like, we don't have to watch it every time he's in the field, but have it ready so that when he throws his interception, you can, like, replay it and we can see Bill Belichick reacting in real time. That's all I ask. I feel like that's not a lot to ask. I feel like I just saved the NFL, by the way.
Right. I don't think it is. I think I'd love to see Bill Belichick watching Jameis Winston's film from last year, like watching a cut-up of all 30 of his interceptions.
I would pay so much money for that. Like, that's the content we need in these trying times. Okay. Question three. Would you ever go on The Bachelor? Bachelorette. Like Mike Renner.
Yes. I think I would. I mean, I have a girlfriend right now and I'm happy with her, but I think I would go for the experience. I don't want her to listen to this and think I'm like looking for it.
How would you characterize your job?
I would say football writer.
And then you know there'd be a football player. And you know it would be like Josh Allen.
I'm mad that we didn't get to see interactions between Mike Renner and Clay Harbor.
That's all I wanted.
Talking about his PFF grade.
I know. That's all I wanted. Well, you remember Clay Harbor? He was so nice. He'd be like, that's cool, man.
Like in my recap, I made fun of him, like his first episode, just because he was kind of goofy. And then like one of his friends DM'd me and was like, hey, Clay read your recap. He thinks it's hilarious. And I was like, I never want to cross paths with him in public because he's a very large man and he could just strangle me.
Question four, which NFL player would you like to see as The Bachelor?
Baker Mayfield. I keep answering Baker Mayfield, but I think
absolutely
he would
the best
have
choice.
The most entertaining season.
He's married. We're throwing all married and stuff out the window.
Oh, yeah.
100% the best choice would be Baker Mayfield. Because you know he would just be him. He would not have like Russell Wilson style reservations about how he'd be portrayed. Like that would go out the window so quickly with him.
Oh, now that you mentioned Russ, I would see it just from like an awkward, like, you know, like a cringeworthy standpoint. I think it would be so, I don't know. I think it would be weird to watch Russell Wilson in that environment.
Someone, you remember how like Russell Wilson, the mic'd up, everybody was making fun of him for being like so dorky and positive. And then someone I saw tweeted the other day, this was when the Peyton Manning, you know, rumors broke. They were like, man, Russell Wilson's going to make a ton of money in the booth. And everyone was like, no, he wouldn't. He sucks. He's so boring. I disagree. Like, I would love nothing more than hearing Russell Wilson being forced to criticize other players. I think that would be incredible television.
And he'd be prepared. Like, he'd be more prepared than any other player we've ever seen join the booth.
He would be, but I wonder, like, if he criticizes his teammates, like, in film sessions, like, what does that even sound like for Russell Wilson?
It's probably got to be so heartbreaking as one of his teammates, just because, you know, he's so nice, but
I don't know.
It probably just cuts deeper when he does it. But I'll say this, like, I think Russ is more of a bachelor contestant than he is a bachelor.
1,000% who, like, gets cut right before the fantasy. last question, as always, is from, like, Russ, he's like the super nice guy who, like, kind of makes everyone's like, he's really nice. Like, you know, I feel like I'm at home with you. And maybe, like, no, he doesn't talk. He doesn't, like, reveal stuff about the other guys in the house. But he gets a hometown date, and then that's his last date. Last question, as always, comes from Lenny. I changed my mind. It's not bachelor related. We're pivoting. Lenny wants to know, what would be your first tweet if Josh Allen wins the Super Bowl?
Oh, I would just deactivate.
You would deactivate. Is that a promise?
No tweet.
Is that a promise?
Yes, that is a promise. If Josh Allen ever wins the Super Bowl, I am deactivating on the spot.